So Grant Herbert, I've known Grant for probably about 3 or 4 years now. We've done some training together through a guy by the name of Taki Moore, and he's programmed the black belt. Same with Katrina. And Grant's been around for a long time. He knows a heap of stuff. When I asked Grant to shoot me some information through about what he can talk about into a Dropbox folder, he sent me all this stuff, and I just looked at it and I went, wow, that's a lot of stuff. So he's a man that is very well versed. He's an international speaker, so he's spoken around the world to, I think, bigger audiences than this. That's a yes.
And smaller.
Yeah, I got this. So do you want me to do your intro, or are you going to describe yourself as we come up? So please give a big round of applause to Grant Herbert. Thank you, mate.
Thanks, mate. Thanks, buddy. Thank you. Fantastic. So grab a seat, and just as I've got you to grab a seat, we're going to have a bit of fun. See, I'm one of these speakers that doesn't mind having the after-lunch session. Who had a really good lunch? Yeah, I did too. And you didn't have a good lunch, Pete? Or you just don't like putting your hand up? Cool. And that's cool. And after lunch, it's like, and we've got this guy all afternoon, and it's hot outside, and so I understand that it's about keeping our state up this afternoon, because you've invested time out of your business to be here today, and I know you want to get everything out of it, and I want to do everything that I can to make sure that you do that. So I'm going to keep my state up, and I'm going to ask you to take responsibility to do that for yourself. Now, if that means that you need to drink more water and get more involved, then that's what you need to do. So what I want you to do right now is just stand up. Go around behind your chair. Just push your chair out of the way. And I want you to put your feet shoulder width apart and just reach up into the air like so. Give me the spirit fingers. Yeah, and I didn't have to do that, but I like to do that. It's a bit of fun for me. But what I'm going to get you to do on three, I want you to reach up as high as you can by going up on your toes and reach as far as you can. One, two, three, let's go. Now that you're there, reach a bit higher. Fantastic. All right, high five the person next to you. Grab a seat and let's get into it. So why did I do that? A couple of reasons. One, it was to get a little bit of energy going and to keep us stretched and to keep us motivated. But I also like to make sure that everything I do has more than one meaning. We all tend to tell ourselves that we don't have enough time. So if we can do more than one thing with that same bit of time and energy, then all the better. So once I got you to stand up and I got you to go behind your chair and I got you to put your feet shoulder width apart and then reach up in the air and I had a little bit of fun with you and got you to do this, I then said I was going to count to three. And when I got to three, what was it that I asked you to do? Nice outside voices so I can hear you. No, the first thing I asked you to do. Reach for the stars on your toes. Yeah, how far did I ask you to reach? As high as you could go. And you all did that. Well done. And then what did I do? What did I ask you to do then? Reach higher. And every single one of us went that little bit extra. So I've got two questions for you. The first one is, why can't you just do as you're told the first time? The second one, though, and the one that's more important, is why is it that we keep that little bit extra in reserve? Have a quick chat to the people at the table, and then I'll get you to come back to me and we'll talk about it. All righty. So coming back up the front, Phil has just said you. So we make those external statements, which is great. For the rest of the afternoon, what I want you to do is give yourself permission to make this all about you. So from now on, when you give answers and we're talking about these things, we go, I keep this little bit extra in reserve for this reason, etc. So that's fantastic. Excellent. So what I need you to do and what you need you to do to get the maximum out of this afternoon is to go that little bit extra. Instead of holding that little bit back, give it all so that you can get maximum out of the time that you've invested coming here this afternoon. So, who am I? I'm an ordinary guy with an outstanding wife and 5 amazing kids and 2 grandchildren. This morning, I only had 1 grandchild and I got a phone call in Katrina's second session and I was outside bawling like a baby because I now have a 10-pound-1 grandson and I'm really, really proud of that. My daughter Cassie, and now she has two children. So that adds to the story. But I'm just an ordinary guy. I put my pants on one leg at a time. And a lot of times, because I'm a subject matter expert in what I do, people tend to think, same as with what your expertise is, that you must have it all together. And I certainly don't. I'm a work in progress in what I'm going to work through with you this afternoon. I'm probably just a little bit further down the track to some of you. And I'm going to take you on a journey this afternoon that is out of my own journey of what I like to call my journey of imperfection. I'm going to teach you stuff that I've learnt from someone else, from a book, or from some other mentor that I've then implemented and seen success with. I don't have any new ideas. There's nothing new under the sun. And you'll notice that there are some similarities between some of the stuff that Katrina did an awesome job with this morning and what I'm talking about this afternoon. And it tends to happen when we put these things together, when people put these things together, it flows. And Nick tomorrow will be carrying on with a similar thing, and it's going to allow us to embed that. So I need to get some permission from you this afternoon, or you need to give yourself permission. I can get up here and I can be a speaker and I can be a trainer and I can be a presenter and I can give you all that and keep that hat on only. But what I know, my experience is that it's about making sure that if there are any limiting beliefs or any barriers for you getting the most out of this afternoon, that we overcome those. So what I'd like to get your permission to do is every now and then, if I do need to, is to pull up, reach down and put on my coach's hat. Because I know there's going to be times this afternoon where you'll have an answer that is an awesome answer, but you won't give it because of what you think others might think about that answer. There'll be times where you will go on the surface level of what I'm talking about because it may not feel comfortable because you're in that comfort zone. And I have the ability with love and with respect to be able to pull you through that so that you get maximum benefit out of that this afternoon. I also know and am very skilled in being able to know when to take conversations outside the room as well rather than continue with it within the room. So is there anyone who does not give me permission to coach you through those barriers as I see them come up this afternoon? Fantastic. Well done. Okay, so what we're going to be talking about today comes from a number of our programs that we run. This actually comes from our workplace EQ program. And emotions aren't talked about a lot in business. However, we are emotional beings. We're going to be doing a lot of stuff on emotions this afternoon. But before we start, a couple of things. You've got a workbook there. And after my photoshopped image, there are a number of exercises. We're going to be doing those a little bit later. So just have it open at this page for now, and I'll guide you through those as we need them. So today is going to be about implementation more than me standing up here telling you what I know. You can go on my website, grantherbert.com. You can get some resources from there. You can learn a lot of the stuff that I am going to be working through with you this afternoon online. It's not about the information. The second thing is, and you'll see on my banner over here, it says inspiration. I'm not going to give you motivation this afternoon. If you've ever been to a motivational speaker, and they do a fantastic job, and you come out of there and you're all fired up and you're all pumped up and you're ready to go, and on Monday when you go back to work, they're not there. And that tends to dissipate and falls away. See, motivation is something that needs to come from within. So hopefully this afternoon, what I want to do is inspire you to motivate yourself to put this stuff into practice and implement it. All right, so emotions. We're going to be talking about emotional intelligence. We're going to be talking about personal power and a number of things this afternoon. But why is it that we don't talk about emotions at work? We don't talk about how emotions are affecting our business. We don't talk about a lot of these wrongly named soft skills. We all look for things that are, practical, things that we can do, technical things. You know, there's a number of people in this room, that aren't in this room today that probably aren't here because they saw this as being, I just want to get into the meaty stuff of business. But just have a conversation with some music in the background with the people next to you right now. Why is it that we do not talk about these issues and put them in the priority that we need to in business? So who feels sometimes like their emotions are out of whack within their business? Is it just me, or are there people in the room? Now, the more interactive you are this afternoon, the more you'll get out of me. So this is like, yeah, I'm not real sure about the answer. This is, yeah, I'm with you. All right? Who sees emotional things happen within their workplace? Who's ever had a client that has got upset with them? Yep. Who's ever felt bad about that and about themselves because of it? Yep. So there's a number of people in the room that aren't putting their hand up, and that's cool too. They're doing internal hand-putting upping. However, most of us have challenges around us to do with emotions. So I want to make sure that we talk about building an emotionally intelligent workplace. Now, I do a lot of work with professional services and with lawyers. And I remember having an executive coaching session with a young lawyer who was a senior associate on his way to partner. And he got really, really upset with me in the meeting. But at the start, he said, my dad taught me to leave emotions outside work. You don't take emotions into work. Now, the challenge that I have with that is twofold. One, he got really, really emotional about 15 minutes after that in our interaction within his session when I was helping him break through. But the challenge is we are emotional beings. And it's like trying to leave yourself at home and be someone different when you go to work. And there are things that we need to change in terms of our natural style and all that sort of stuff to do what we need to do at work. But thinking that we can leave our emotions outside the door and not deal with those emotions and then put our head down and our bum up and just get in all of the technical stuff and all the stuff that we know how to do and we feel empowered to do within the business is very, very dangerous. Whoever goes home after being at work all day, being in their business all day, and they feel a bit emotionally drained, a bit, yep. Yep. I love that. That was awesome. Hand went straight up. And that's because we're emotional beings. So whether it's stuff that's going on subconsciously or we're consciously aware of what's going on around us, we are energetically depleted in our emotions when we have stuff happen in and around us all the time. So it's about building an emotionally intelligent workplace. It's about building a culture within your workplace that it's okay to talk about these things and it's okay to deal with these issues. So the first thing I want to do is charge you with the responsibility of paying this forward and taking it back within your own workplace and the people that you work with and help them to understand that we need to get on top of this area. Because here's what I know. You can significantly reduce conflict and manage stress by developing social and emotional intelligence. You know, we wear things like badges all the time. We wear busy as a badge. Who's busy? Yeah, I hear people all the time, busy, say, oh, I'm so busy. And I feel like going, compared to what? Compared to people who don't have any clients or any customers? So we know we're busy. The other word that's up there that we hear all the time now is we go, oh, I'm stressed. Who's ever said that? Oh, I feel stressed. I'm so stressed. You know, stress is a good thing, but the level of stress and the longevity of stress and how much stress that we put ourselves through is the issue. See, I'm standing before you today as someone who is recently and still coming out of stage 3 adrenal fatigue. Through what I'm about to teach you in this session, but more so in the next session, I really allowed stress to get a hold of me. And then there's conflict. There's not just the conflict of someone having a dispute with you. There's this internal conflict that goes on as well. And I know that by building social and emotional intelligence, what we're going to talk about today is going to help you to reduce those levels of stress and conflict. So we're going to look at the problems of a lack of social and emotional intelligence. We're going to look at the impact on us and on business. We're going to look at 5 key principles that will lay a platform for you and I of what we need to know before we get into the how-to. We're going to look at a definition of SEI, social and emotional intelligence. Some people haven't even heard of it. I'm going to introduce you to 26 distinct competencies that belong to social and emotional intelligence, and then we're going to do some work. We're actually going to get down, sleeves up, and start in the room today, rather than this be good information that you take away and don't do anything with. Is that cool? All right. So here's some of the problems that I see with a lack of social emotional intelligence. The first one is this conflict, continual conflict, whether it be internal conflict, whether it be external conflict, whether it's with your clients, whether it's with your internal staff, or whether it's just with yourself. You know, the greatest relationship that we all need to develop is the one with ourselves, and we're going to do some work on that this afternoon. But conflict is everywhere, and it's costly. It's costly on your business. Who invests any time during the day in conflicts, putting out fires, dealing with conflicts? Yeah? Who has something else that they could be doing instead of doing that? Yeah, so the long-term effect is you end up, most of us, taking away from what we do after we close the doors of our business to deal with those issues. So conflict is extremely costly. The second thing is it eliminates engagement. You know, all through the 90s and the, you know, the 2000s, there's this whole thing about client engagement and staff engagement and, you know, here's the key right here, because when we are operating in our emotions ineffectively, it literally drains energy. It saps creative energy. It saps our energy. So when you're feeling like this, you tend not to do the same amount of work, productive work, as you do when you're up and when you're ready and when you're on. And because of that, it hijacks health. As I've already said with me, adrenal fatigue. Who's never heard of adrenal fatigue, by the way? Western medicine in Australia hasn't caught up with it yet. You will not get diagnosed at a GP with adrenal fatigue. So I went through something 4 years ago. I had a melanoma under my thumbnail. That's why now if I go to give you a high five, I can only give you 4.5, but I still mean 5. So they had to chop it off. And through that, I got really sick. They took out lymph nodes and all this sort of stuff, and I'm really doing well today. And it wasn't just because of that, but that tipped me over the edge. You know, I had been someone who was highly stressed, high need for, more personal power, what we're going to be dealing with this afternoon, and that just tipped me over the edge. And adrenal fatigue is where our adrenal glands, which are in our kidneys, they sit on the top of our kidneys, little triangular glands, they regulate the cortisol and the other stress hormones, adrenaline and neoadrenaline, that go out for that fight or flight response. Now, here's the thing. When you use too much of your cortisol and it's depleted, your adrenal glands are fatigued and they're not able to do what they're supposed to do in conjunction with the pituitary gland in your brain. So what happened for me was that when I got up of a morning, I had no cortisol left. It was just pumping through my veins all the time. Who needs a coffee first thing in the morning? They actually need a coffee. They say that to, I need to get a coffee. Great. No one in this room? Okay, just a couple. That's a good indication that you're at some level of adrenal fatigue, because the worst thing you can do of a morning is have caffeine, because it actually sends out more cortisol into your bloodstream. So the reason why that system is there is for the fight or flight syndrome, and predominantly for when we were being chased by saber-toothed tigers. Who got chased by a saber-toothed tiger in the last 30 days? Can I see your hand? None of us. But the 21st century saber-toothed tiger is worse than the old one. And that is being on all the time. That is being totally connected all the time. That is being high level stress, working so flat out, etc., mentally as well as physically all the time. And it hijacks your health and causes things like high blood sugar levels, ages your skin more quickly than it needs to. It can be attributed to challenges with the heart and stroke and total changes within your body. So it's extremely important that we do something about it. But here's the good news. It doesn't have to be that way. Because when you build your social and emotional intelligence, relationships are restored. So instead of having conflict, you've got better relationships. I love this picture. Remember when you were little and you had your best friends and you had a fight with your best friends and then it was sort of all over and you didn't talk about it a couple of days later? You know, I know my daughter, she's got her best BFFSK, best friend forever since kindergarten. She added a couple of letters to it, right? And it would really amaze me. She'd be talking about this fight that she had with her on a Wednesday. And that's it, I'm not friends with her anymore. We're not. And that young lady would be at our house for a sleepover on Saturday night. They get over it quickly. But adults, we tend not to do that. So relationships are a lot better. The second thing is that teams become united and all the oars hit the water at the same time and they're all going towards the same direction. And the result of that is a profitable level of productivity. I'm not just talking about money, but that's important. We're in business here. We're talking commercially. But productive in all areas of life, not just within your business. And the answer is to build a socially and emotionally intelligent workplace. All right, let's just have a look at five key principles. The first one is IQ is never enough. Now, normally I've got my presenter view in front of me, so I'm freewheeling at the moment because my computer's around the corner there, and I think I know what the next slide that I need to bring up is. But IQ is never enough. And our learned gentleman, or facts, wax facsimile thereof that we've got here today, said that it be careful not to make intellect our God. It makes a good servant, but it's not a good master. And IQ is important, and our level of technical skill and our ability to take on cognitive and use information is important, but it's not enough. So if we look at the whole person, and I'm quickly going to go through a few of these things. We've got our cognitive intelligence and we've got our behavioral preferences. So our cognitive intelligence, our IQ, it's our ability to be able to take on and use information. And our behavioral preferences are how we present ourselves to the world, how our brain responds to certain stimuli. And most of that is happens up until about the age of 7, plus or minus 2. And then we've got our social and emotional intelligence, our social competences, our ability to be aware of our emotions and work with emotions. Here's the difference. The top two are genetic / environmental. So if you've got a high IQ, it's got something to do with your DNA. It's got something to do with your genetics. And they have proven that you can increase your IQ by about 1% over the course of your lifetime. And I think that was so someone else could write a book. But let's agree that it's pretty well fixed. And although we can mask who we are naturally in our behavioral preferences to be who we feel we need to be to get on with other people, they're pretty well fixed. They're not learned skills past about the age of 7 plus or minus 2. But social intelligence and emotional intelligence are a set of competencies that it doesn't matter how old you are or how long you've been in business today, you can develop those skills. They are learned competencies. And that's the good news. So that's the first one. IQ is not enough. The second thing is a thing called emotional hijacking. Has anyone not heard of emotional hijacking? So you've all heard of it. Fantastic. I'll just move on to the next slide. But emotional hijacking. Have you ever had one of those days where you just can't think? Anyone? Yeah, great. We've got to keep the state up, guys. It's after lunch. Now, is it okay, by the way, to use the term guys? I use it as a generic term. Is that cool, ladies? Thank you very much. I love that. I'm giving you two thumbs up, right? My best friend told me, and he was a great help when I was going through this. My best friend said, you do realize the only thing that separates us from the animal kingdom is that we have two opposable thumbs. Best friend. So emotional hijacking. Here's how it works. There's two parts of our brain that I want to talk about. There is our emotional brain and our logical brain. So down the base here, we've got a number of components just above the brainstem and the cerebellum, which is a small brain. We have the limbic system, which contains things like the thalamus, the hypothalamus, and the amygdala. And there's two of the amygdala, one in each hemisphere. And it is where our emotions are regulated. And in particular, we need to worry about the amygdala, which is where our emotional memory is stored and where our recognition of threat comes from. Now, people were taking some photos. By the way, I'm quite happy to give you a copy of these to give everybody, a copy of these slides as well. But then we've got the other part of our brain, which is the outer thin layer, the neocortex, and indeed the front of our brain, which is the prefrontal cortex. And that is the logical part of our brain. Now, until I became a subject matter expert in this area, I didn't understand any of this, right? But is this why, when we can't think of things, we go like this? We're trying to, I don't know. That's the only dad joke that I'm going to tell this afternoon, because that went nowhere. But this is what happens. Watch this process. So the first thing is, every bit of information that comes into our brain goes in via the thalamus, which is in the limbic system. And what it does, it sends that information to both the logical brain and to the amygdala at the same time. But the amygdala then does a threat assessment and says, is there something here that I need to fear? Is there something going on here that I need to take control of emotionally? And if that's the case, it will then actually cut off any more information going to the logical part of our brain. And when that happens, we make an emotional-only response. And sometimes the behavior that comes is not as we'd like to if we had a thought of it logically. So in conflict, for example, who's heard of this great conflict resolution skill that says, separate the person from the problem? In theory, that sounds really, really easy. Who's mastered that here in the room? When somebody says something to you, what do? It hurts. We take it personally. We are emotional beings. There are ways that we can put strategies in place to overcome that, and that's what we teach in social emotional intelligence. But normally, we will respond or react to it, and if our behavior is unresourceful, it's not good for us and others around us. So the amygdala actually hijacks the energy. So the reason why you're not able to think is because the amygdala has taken all the thinking away from you. The third thing is, it starts with awareness. And the great news is, you are doing number three right now. See, if we walk around with a bag over our head, we're going to run into things. We're not going to know what's going on around us. And we need to be made aware of where we are with our social emotional intelligence. And we need to be made aware, firstly, of what it is. And once we know where we are, we need to train the gaps. We need to be able to go, because they're learned competencies, okay, for example, behavioral self-control. This is where I'm at with it, and this is where I need to be, and this is the gap. So you can get training and you can have that developed. And the last one is that you need to coach to get long-term change. Now, I'm not talking about necessarily getting an external coach like me to come in and work with you. I'm talking about any environment that gives you the support and accountability to be able to make incremental change over a long period of time. So what is social emotional intelligence? By the way, I've put it up there now, but who has never heard of social and emotional intelligence before? Fantastic. Well, see, now you can't say that anymore when you leave the room. In fact, incorrect use of my language, and language is important. You can, but you can choose not to as well. But most people have never heard of it. They've heard of emotional intelligence. They might have even read Daniel Goleman's book that came out in 85, an awesome book about emotional intelligence, but they haven't heard much about it. Well, here's what it is. Social emotional intelligence is the ability to be aware of your own emotions and the emotions of others in the moment, and then to use that information to manage yourself and manage your relationships. So if we pull that apart, the first thing I want you to understand is, it's an ability, and we've already talked about that. It's a skill that you can learn, indeed a set of skills that you can learn. It's an ability to be first aware. Aware of whose emotions? Your own. And then the emotions of others. The main key here is in the moment. So right here, right now, what emotion am I going through? What is the effect it's having on me, and what's the effect it's having on those around me? And just like I said with the workshop that we're doing this afternoon, if I just give you information alone, it's useless. It's just more information that you've got no time to do anything with. Same with emotional intelligence. What we learn, the key is to use that information to manage yourself and manage your relationship. See, emotions aren't a bad thing. It's not about getting rid of emotions. There's an emotional state called anger, or we get angry. Who's ever been angry? Yeah. Who's angry now, right now? That's cool. So if I was to go home tonight and I was in the lounge room with my beautiful wife, Paula, and our twins, Isaac and Tegan. We were watching television, and someone knocked down my door. And they said, I'm going to take your children. Who understands if I was any sort of a father, I'm going to do everything I can to stop that from happening. And I'm probably going to get a little bit angry with someone, you know, thinking they could do that. Now, if I use that emotion to subdue that person until the police get there, then that's a resourceful use of my emotion. But if I reach over behind our lounge and get my metaphorical baseball bat, because I don't have one, and beat that person to submission because they got me so angry, how dare they come in and invade our personal space and think they're going to take my children, and I beat that person with that baseball bat out of the same emotion, then who understands when the police come, they're not just taking him. They're taking me as well. So it's not about getting rid of the emotion. They're there. They're there for a purpose. They're there. Even anger is there to help us to be able to do and be who we need to be. It's about managing the emotion. Thank you. So who's heard of this thing of this myth? Oh, men, they just are unable to express their emotions. Who's ever heard that or said it? Yeah. I talk to lots of ladies in rooms who say to me, why is it just the men? Why don't they realize that that happens for us as well? Yeah, I see some heads shaking with the ladies here. So it's not gender specific. We're all emotional beings and we need to learn how to best utilize those emotions. All right, so let's have a quick look at social emotional intelligence. I'm going to rush through some stuff or go a little bit quicker through some stuff now because we really want to get into the meaty part of this afternoon where you're actually doing something. Just to give you some awareness of what it is, there's a four-quadrant model of social emotional intelligence which is at the back of those notes. You can have a look at it later. That's been around since 85 and it's been used now. It's being used by Fortune 500 companies around the world. Now, I do mine a little bit differently, and you'll see it in the that it is different if you look at others. I actually like to put everything that's about us, self, I like to put that above the line. I'll just explain the only reason why I do it differently. Who's heard of the principle of cause and effect? Okay, so when we're at cause, we're above the line in our thinking, and we're taking responsibility. And when we're at effect, it's everyone else's fault, and we're externalizing and pushing blame. So I like my models to reflect that. Okay, that's why it's different. So the first thing we do is we've got awareness and we've got management. And then there's self and there's others. So the first quadrant is self-awareness. So it's about self and it's about awareness. And then there's self-management. So there's three competencies within self-awareness and there's 10 competencies within self-management. And then there's social awareness, or sometimes called others awareness. And there's three competencies, like empathy is one of them that's in there. And then there are 10 relationship management competencies. And there's 26 in total, and I'll introduce them to you shortly. So 26, in fact, let's do it right now. If you go to the back of those worksheets, you will see, and it's a little bit out of whack, but who cares? Because blessed are the flexible because they don't get bent out of shape. But on the second last, the page that has Katrina, when you get to Katrina, go back, turn back on the other side of Katrina, and you'll see this page here. Okay? And there are 26 competencies there. Emotional self-awareness, accurate self-assessment, etc. What I want you to do right now is just have a little bit of a look at that and see if you recognize any of those. See if they're things that are common to you. If you've got a pen, just put a tick next to them. I'm going to come for a little bit of a walk down here. Just while you're doing that. Because you'll notice that a lot of those skills are things that you've probably heard as soft skills at some time or another. So all we want to do this afternoon is get an understanding of these. And you can take this away and you'll have the ability to look further into those. And by the way, one of the things that I didn't say that I should have said before is that I know with what I do, by the way, in fact, can I just get everyone to look at me a moment? I should have done this before. I know that with what I do for a living, that there's a possibility that this afternoon I'm going to pull a Band-Aid off something and some air is going to get in there and it's going to hurt and then I'm going to go away. That's not my intention. So I'd like to leave a window of the next 7 days open that if any of you want to connect, just go to grantherbert.com, connect with me. If there's something that you want clarification on or something that comes up from you for you out of this, I'm more than happy to give you an answer, point you in direction of a resource, make those resources available, whatever, so that you can overcome that. Because I do understand that this is only surface stuff that we're dealing with today. All right, so go through, have a look. How are we doing? All right, who recognizes some of them there? I see your hand. Okay, Alicia, what's the first one you've got to tick on? Empathy. Yeah, we've all heard of empathy. Who understands that there are people out there that lack a bit of empathy? Yeah. Who actually lacks a bit of empathy themselves sometimes? Yeah, I know I have. What about yourself? Great. You've heard of some of these things, and some of them, particularly in the relationship management skills, you know, things like communication, inspirational leadership, interpersonal effectiveness, building trust, all these sort of things are taught in various forms. So a lot of them are familiar to you, but looking at them from an emotional perspective is what we need to do. Fantastic. And I wasn't even playing then. I said to Megan earlier, she said, I'm going to hold this up and let you know your timings and whatever. And I said, I'll have a bit of fun with you. I'll just pretend I haven't seen it. But I'm not going to do that. I'm going to remain emotionally intelligent. So here's what I want us to do right now. I want us to take a look at this exercise or these sheets that you've got in front of you. And remembering that you've just got to work back to front a little bit, but you're smart people, you can work it out. And I want you to have a look at the definitions. And I want you to invest the next 2 or 3 minutes going through and identifying in some way, a highlighter, a tick, a cross, whatever you want to do, things that you feel you could actually do a little bit better in and that would make your life and the life of others just that little bit better. So go ahead. Who found that exercise a little bit uneasy? Yeah. These things are about us. They're about, you know, emotions are in here and in here. They're not external things. The behavior that we see and the reaction or response to those emotions are external. But looking inward sometimes can be a little bit uncomfortable. Now, I heard a term used this morning, and we always use it, called the comfort zone. I think I heard it this morning. Did I hear that here this morning? I think someone said it. So we've all heard of the comfort zone. Why are things within our comfort zone? What gives them the right to live within our comfort zone? Experience, thank you. Why are they in that comfort zone? Why do you put things like that in there? You do? Fantastic. You do a lot. What else? Great. And they're all great answers. They're comfortable. Because they're in this comfort zone. Now, I hear these things all the time, and I'm just having a bit of fun here, but it's also very important to go, now, who's heard us people say, the magic lives outside your comfort zone? Ever heard that? Seen a Facebook or an Instagram post about it or whatever? Now, no disrespect to those people, but that's BS. There's no magic out there. It's uncomfortable. And who wants to get around uncomfortable all day? It's uncomfortable. So all these things that live out here, that, you know, the magic is out there, whatever people say, we had over here that these things are easy. Now, language is important to me, and I prefer rather than use the word easy, because if there's an opposite word to that people use too much, I like to use the word familiar. So the reason they are comfortable is because they are familiar. We've done them. We can, you know, over a repetition period of time. Who likes to speak in public. Who would like to come up here now and take this mic off me and do what I'm doing? That's up to me. not that subject? All right. Okay, that's fantastic. Who on any subject would not like to be up here doing what I'm doing right now? A couple of you. Great. The only reason is because it's not familiar to you. And you're believing things about yourself and about the situation that will make that feel uncomfortable to you. Apparently, speaking in public is only second in the list of the things that people fear, and I'm talking about internal fears here, things that people fear is only second to death by fire. Really? Now, for me, there's a huge gap between death by fire and speaking in public. But I speak in some rooms and people go, death by fire is worse. It just seems to be this thing where people have this, it's so uncomfortable. And it's all about what's going on in here. And we're going to deal with that in our next session. But the other thing that I hear about is this thing of step outside your comfort zone. Who's heard that? Yeah. Here's my challenge with that. If I step outside my comfort zone, what can I also then do? I can step back in. And sometimes, and I know I do it, and I've done it, and you've probably done it, you don't even get your leg all the way down. It's like, step back in. So here's something that I want to pose to you today. So we said that this is familiar, and the only reason this stuff's uncomfortable and outside our comfort zone is it's unfamiliar. Much better language for you to use than easy or hard. When we think something is hard, what normally happens? Because it's hard. So it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. But when we look at it this way, and we go, no, this is easy because it's familiar, and this is just not familiar. So instead of stepping out of your comfort zone, what I teach people to do, and what I do myself, is continue to expand your comfort zone. And then how do we make things familiar that are unfamiliar? So we've done it the first time. What do we need to continue to do? Continue, practice, keep repeating it. So what is one thing that you do now in your business that's second nature that the first time you did it scared the pants off you? Think of one thing. Yep. Turning your computer on. Yeah. Feel your pain. Now, you're on the thing all the time, aren't you? Yeah? What else? Someone over here. What's something? Presenting. Yeah. You thought your head was going to implode the first time you went up there, didn't you? Yeah. Over here. What do you do something now? It's just second nature, but you used to be scared of doing it. Calling in sick. You got that down pat now? Okay. I like that one. What's another one? Asking people for money. Yeah. It'd be so good to be in business if you could just do it for nothing, wouldn't it? You didn't have to ask people to give you money. But how easy is it or familiar is it for you to do those things now? They're just second nature. And whether it's speaking in public or anything else, it's about expanding your comfort zone. Stretch and do more things. Now, who's seen the cross-section of a tree where it's been cut and you see all the rings? Right? Now, no trees have been harmed in the making of this metaphor. However, we need to understand that a tree gets its strength not by its height, but by its width and as it grows. So, being comfortable keeps us where we are. But being uncomfortable, like a few of us were here doing this exercise, was just because it's not familiar to us. When was the last time you or anybody that you know sat down and talked about, let alone had a look at a piece of paper and looked at their emotions and their emotional intelligence and how they're doing with that stuff? And we don't normally do these things. Right? And in a lot of the work that I do in the programs that I run, we do emotional audits and a number of different things when we're building our emotional self-awareness. And we look at, you know, what is the emotion that I'm going through right now? But just before we do that, what you've just done is you have started the next level of self-awareness. So now what your next step is to go, okay, I need to do something about this. But before you'll do that, you need to have a structure, you need to have a process, and you need to have a reason why you would do that. So the first thing you've got to do is engage with the pain of, for you and for others, of any of those competencies that you feel are costing you right now. So Taryn, could I just use your example again? Because you gave one. What is your current level of personal power, which is lacking, as you said? What is it costing you? What are you missing out on? What are we missing out on from you? Happiness. And do you want to be happy? Great. Do you want to be happy enough that you will do something about building your personal power? Great. Well, you're going to love, as I said, the next session. Who else has got something that's they want to change, that they've recognized they want to change? Just Taryn? Yeah, what do you want? Stress management. So your level of current level of stress management, what's it costing you? A work in progress. The word try is a very dangerous word. You know, what did Yoda say to Obi-Wan? He said, do or do not. There is no try. But beyond Star Wars, that is a powerful message. Because the word try actually says to our brain, leave room for failure. And why do we do it? Because if we don't succeed, what do we say? It's okay, I tried. So let's eradicate the word try and exchange it with do or do not. So the first thing we're going to do is we said we're going to have a reason to want to change this. But what I want to quickly show you is a process that we need to go through. Now, I am as right brain as they come. And up until about three and a half years ago, I didn't use models or processes for anything. And it made it challenging for the people I was working with to understand what was going on because they were different to me. But it also made it a little bit challenging for me to understand as well when I was explaining to people. I thought I knew what I was doing. But I now have a model for everything. And I like to use simple four-quadrant models because I'm just an ordinary guy, simple guy. So the first thing we've got to do whenever we want to change behavior or change anything, we've got to recognize that the behavior, the emotion, whatever it is, the lack of emotional intelligence in that competency, we've got to recognize that it is a problem and that it is costing us something or people around us something. So it's not good for us, it's not good for those around us, and it's not good for the greater good. So that's the first thing. However, that's not enough. And you've just done that, you've recognized it. The next thing we've got to do is reject it. Who here smokes, has smoked, or knows someone that smokes? All right, that should be everyone. Now, I used to smoke up until 25 years ago, whatever it was. All right, so I'm not having a go at smokers. It's a great metaphor for this. So who understands when you see the ads with the, you know, the lady with that goes home to tell her kids that she's got cancer and, you know, the one with the noise where it's going, and the pictures on the cigarette packets that have got people's gangrenous toes falling off. And there's enough evidence there to say putting that cigarette in my mouth and sucking it down into my body is not good for me. Does anyone disagree? All right? And anyone smoking here? How much do they cost? Like, seriously, you've got to mortgage your house to buy a carton of cigarettes. So there's plenty of evidence there and plenty of people recognize that it's not good. However, they keep smoking. So they don't reject it. And the reason why is because they're not sure what to replace it with. And that's the third step. So what do most smokers do when they recognize that they want to stop smoking? What do they normally replace it with? Food or some other addiction. And here's the reason. We'll deal with this more in the next session, but they haven't dealt with the root cause issue, the internal issue of why they would do that to themselves and put that stuff in their body anyway. So all they're doing is getting whatever it is they were trying to get here in another unresourceful way. So the first thing we've just got to recognize that where we're at with our emotions is not where we want to be. We've got to reject that level as being good enough. And we've then got to be able to have other strategies that we can replace it with. You know, we all said before that most of us agreed that when someone said something about us, we take that internally and we respond in that way. Now that's a strategy, and that keeps us safe, and that keeps us where we think we need to be in terms of our own level of self-worth, etc. So we need to replace not only the behavior, but first we've got to replace the mindsets and the beliefs and everything that's behind that that's making us do this in the first place. And how do we make things familiar that are unfamiliar? We continue to do them, as we said. So the fourth thing then, the fourth part of the change process is rewire. So by a continuation and repeating of these, we rewire our brain. It's been proven that our brain is plastic, not made of plastic, but its plasticity allows us to have new patterns, new neural patterns within our brain that take us, instead of going to one path, we go to the other. And by repeating what we've done up until now, that is why we can go from an initial thought that's familiar to us to a learned behavior in 1/250,000th of a second, because it's ingrained and it goes from neuron to neuron to neuron. Who has ever seen someone do that most of you are too young in the room, but that leather work where we had those little chisel things and we chisel into leather and make belts and handbags and wallets and all. Anyone or just me? Yeah, great. So if you think of that, that's what's actually happened in our brain, is that there's been a path formed between those neurons so that when we initially have this thought, we go there just like that. So I don't have a magic spack filler that can fill those up, and neither do you, but what we need to do is we need to just build a new pathway. So somewhere along that pathway, we went towards the unresourceful. So what we need to do is build new strategies, and then over a period of time, they become the new normal. So when we have this initial thought, and we deal with it logically rather than emotionally, hence the amygdala hijack, we go and we do this new one. So the repetition means that I'm talking to you 6 months from now and you're doing things totally different to how you're doing them now. Does that make sense? Fantastic. So that's what we've got to do. We've got to recognize, reject, replace, and rewire. And over a period of time, those things become familiar. So in regard to what we're talking about here today, this needs to be the start of you checking in with your emotions from here on in and seeing what their effect is. And after the break, as I said, we're going to get into one of the emotional intelligence competencies of personal power. So if we have a look now at the first quadrant, if you go to the last page, I think it's in there. Yep, first quadrant, top left, and you'll see it here. As well, we've got self-awareness. Now, there are three competencies within self-awareness. There is emotional self-awareness, accurate self-assessment, and personal power. So emotional self-awareness is about being aware of which emotions we go through, being able to name those emotions in the moment, and have an understanding of what they do within our body, within our thinking, etc. And we'll do a quick exercise with that in a moment. Accurate self-assessment is about going, you know what, this is where I think I'm with this. And, you know, let's take empathy. Yeah, I think I'm right up here with empathy. I'm doing really well with that. There could be other people who think differently to me about that. So we've got to make sure that we're accurate. But not accurate just in the overestimation. We've got to be accurate in the underestimation and make sure that we're not bringing ourselves down further than what we actually are. So accurate self-assessment. And then there's personal power. You know, that sense of self-worth, that sense of how we feel about ourselves, and the knowledge and, you know, inner certainty that everything's going to be okay, that I've got everything within me and around me to be who I need to be in every area of my life. And for me, personally, I've found, and I've worked with thousands of people in this area, that personal power is, in most cases, the root cause of a lot of other challenges that we have. So But that's why I've chosen that today we're going to, after the break, we're going to go deep into personal power. We're going to actually do some exercises. But before we do that, I want to just lay a bit of a platform for that. So the next step is for us to actually start developing those self-awareness competencies. And as I said, we're going to get into that. But I just want to lay a platform for that right now. So as I said, I stand before you today as someone who hasn't got it all together. I'm not perfect. You know, in my belief, there's only ever been one perfect person on the planet, and they crucified him, so I don't want to be perfect. And perfection, a lot of times, is a self-sabotage strategy that we run anyway that says, well, look, I'll try to be perfect, knowing it's not achievable, and it keeps us safe as to where we feel we need to be. But I went through a military career, a corporate career, a not-for-profit, 5 years of not-for-profit, and in full-time pastoral ministry, and then in the early stages of my business, with a high need for significance and a high need for certainty that other people cared about me and liked me, etc. And I'll tell you why. When I was 6 months old, by the way, does anyone in the room remember being 6 months old? Can physically, consciously now go back and go, yeah, I remember being 6 months. Can I see your hand? I'll just quickly, nobody, neither can I. But when I was 15 years of age, I was told that when I was 6 months old, my mum put me on a doorstep and left me there and went home. And Dad came home and said, where's the baby? Like, and that's all right, I've dealt with that. And I'm sure that's not the exact words they said. And Dad went and got me, so that's cool. In fact, it's not all that cool because they laugh about it now. We laugh about it now. Well, they do because, no, not laugh at the actual thing happening, but they were rich, the people. We were as poor as church mice, so they seriously could have left me there. But anyway, so here's the problem. Out of that, when I found that out at 15, I had a pity party for the next 10 years because I formed a belief at that point that my mother didn't love me. That's what I choose to believe out of that. Like, seriously. No mother in the room here would put a baby on a doorstep. Like, seriously, mum mustn't have loved me. So out of that belief, I formed a belief about myself and nursed and rehearsed over a period of time. I changed that from being my mother didn't love me to therefore I am unlovable. And for that 10 years, that was a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I went out seeking never to be rejected again. However, that's not how it works because I was focusing on that. And because of that level of or lack thereof of self-worth that I had out of that I'd chosen to have, by the way, it meant that I actually became unlovable. But my mum's in heaven now, and we had a fantastic relationship. And I rebuilt that relationship when I grew up and realized what the truth was. The true meaning of that event was that my mother loved me so much. See, when she had me at 8 months old, and I had, you know, some issues with an eye and a number of different things, but she was really, really sick. And 54 years ago, there wasn't as much said about postnatal depression and all that sort of stuff. It was like, you know, go home, suck it up, get on with it and be a mother. My mum was really, really sick. She almost died on the table when she had me, and she was pretty sick. So she thought and loved me that much that if I put my baby on that doorstep, you know, they were rich, they were this, whatever she was thinking of at the time, she was willing to give me up so that I could have the life that she felt that she wasn't going to be able to give me in her current mental state of postnatal depression. Now, which one of those two beliefs do you believe are more powerful in terms of me being able to move forward as a healthy member of society and have less issues that I had to have, I had to work through myself and that others had to put up with? The second one. So why am I being so vulnerable and telling you about that story about me? I want you, when we come back from the break, and I don't mean to tell stories openly to the group like this, but I want you to be able to look back in some of those things, and I want you to be able to have a change of meaning. See, nothing has meaning in life except the one we give it. The one that I chose to give it meant that it matched up with how I felt about myself when I was 15 anyway. I already thought I wasn't lovable. I already thought I was a nobody and that I was you know, my lack of self-worth and self-esteem were way down. So this meaning actually fit where I thought I was, and that was comfortable. And the new one would have been scary, and I would have had to change. So when we come back from the break, we're going to go deep into personal power. I'm going to take you through a process of letting you know what it is, but I'm also going to help you to go through one or two exercises and start building that in the room. Because the process is about evaluating, engaging yourself in the need for change, getting some education around it, training, and then having an environment that's empowering for you to be able to both be encouraged but also kept accountable to make these changes and to build those things. So I want to give you the most that I can for us to move on. So can I pass it back to you, Steve?
Beautiful. Thanks very much, Grant. Round of applause for Grant. Thank you, mate. Awesome.